try to balance or to have a balanced approach, which is underpinned by the output, by both the output and the impact. Because sometimes we set our public objectives or key document indicators where we just say we've achieved by coming up with a figure without assessing the impact to that particular beneficiary. So I'm very happy here because when they talk about learnerships and internships, he even talks about ensuring that at the end of the day, the trainees will be absorbed or might even get job opportunities that are there. Chair, on slide number 8, Chair, I think here on bullet number 3, where it talks about the access points, bullet number 5, collaborate with stakeholders, and 6, Chair, one is not happy here with the performance. In all these quarters, your quarter 1, 2, 3, and 4, Chair, my submission will be that maybe the entity might also look at that on how best they can improve. On slide number 9, non-achieved targets, Chair. I was looking at, I think it's key performance indicator number 6, ne? The one that talks about the number of UIF beneficiaries provided with learning and workplace experience opportunities. Chair, here it indicates that the action to be taken or to resolve the problem was it was revised or it was reviewed to be more smart. So what I want to get from the entities that what were the gaps that you identified for you to decide that you need to review this one? And what have you added on this performance indicator? Chair, I was on slide number 9, is it? Now I'm quickly going to slide number 15. Chair, one is happy with the vacancy rate that it has dropped from 13.3% to 8.3%. But Chair, on number 5, the one that talks about the lack of capacity in finance, where they were struggling to actually utilize GREP standard reporting system. Chair, for me, I believe that the human component or human intelligence should not be undermined because it has a potential to make you succeed in actually achieving your targets in an organization or to make you fail. So I can see the status here is indicating that the team has been trained and there was also an element of transfer of skills from an expert that was brought on board. So what I want to get is, what is the current situation right now? Is there an impact? Are they able to utilize the system on their own? The last one is slide number 17. Chair, I was looking here at the performance of the committees. I'm not happy, Chair, with the one that deals with labor activation program છે. Hence, in the findings, there was an indication that there is a lack of capacity on labor activation program. But the report here on slide number 17 indicates that there were no special meetings, of which one seated here would assume that this committee from time to time need to strategize to be able to come up with some interventions in order to address the capacity constraints or challenges that have been indicated. So what may be the reasons? Because I see other committees, they had special meetings, but with this one there was nothing. So that's my submission, Chair. I thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mdele.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, Chair, there is one thing common from the two boards that they are raising to this portfolio committee. That is the issues relating to the oversight role that they would have to play in relation to the advisory role that they are currently playing, as compared to an executive role. Chair, I think it would be proper that we engage with the ministry on this matter, so that we are able to identify what are the gaps in between the two roles of that of an executive board and that of an advisory board in relation to oversight, so that we are all on the same path. The question I have, Chair, is that the presentation was made to the effect that they are only allowed to invest with PIC. Is it a regulatory matter or is it a decision somewhere? What happened? So that we are clear with that. The second question is on the audit findings. Under the recurring findings, there were 57 total findings. 8 were recurring. Now, I'm not sure whether the 8 that has been summarized here is the one that refers to the recurring ones. And the 49 new findings are not listed or tabulated somewhere in the report. And then it says a clean audit, I think it's slide number 29. Not sure. It says the fund has instituted a clean audit committee. The question is this the clean audit committee made up of management, or is a clean audit committee that has been instituted from outside the fund? And so that one would get an understanding in terms of the implementation of the action plan. Thanks, Chair.
From my side, I've got I just want to reflect about it. It's not being maybe those are the expectations that I had, is that in terms of the auditor AG's report on supply chain, as UIF, you have you are listed as those that contract management payments in excess of contract value, inadequate monitoring of the contract. Now, as the board, that you have an advisory board, that thing to me creates a confusion there. In areas of supply chain management, in fact, it's both reports of the board presentation were a bit silent, whereas there are issues that are being raised by the Auditor General in terms of that. So I wanted to check that. It's also saying fraud and lack of consequences. Again, we're in advisory board, but there are AGs, we have gone down in terms of allegations not properly investigated as UIF. You are in advisory board. Make me to understand that what then becomes, because I'm of the view that you are supposed to be aware and in that communicate whatever with the person that it's being said you advise, which at this point is then the minister. My last question is that on the which I agree with the whip on the background by the chair on page 3. Do you have a process of monitoring time to time if the entity is still doing these things? How do you do that? Do you monitor them quarterly? Do you have a system to monitor the above? Those are the few questions from my side. And okay.
Thanks for the indulgence. On poverty alleviation on page 3, chapter 7, there are numbers of figures that have been given of partnership, of piloting, how many people are going to be employed. Are we talking of something that is existing or is something that has been planned? Because I can see that there is budget allocated for those things. For instance, a further 81,000 of learners will be taken through the skills program at a cost of 2.5 billion. And so many other figures that have been given there. Is it something that is going to happen or is it happening? If it is happening, where is it happening? Because I have also noticed that there is a partnership that the Department of Labor and Employment is making with some service providers. Can it be given the detailed program? Which are those details, which are those partnership and the program is implemented or is on the planning stage? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Mahlangu, CFO, whoever is going to respond, it's time to respond, and other board members. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to start and respond to a few questions, and the Commission and other board members will respond. And I'm not going to respond to them in the order of question one to whatever, but I'll pick questions. I'm going to start with the question around whether or not it's mandatory for the fund to invest with PSC. Yes, it's through regulation. It's by law. We can't invest with Old Mutual if we like. So that's the one area that we want to explain. I note the comment, honourable member, that you started by saying ours is an advisory role, you want to engage the ministry. I think we are also ready to take that engagement forward. The question around what are we going to do after the 12 months maternity leave, unemployment, what is going to happen to those members? So if you look at our presentation, we indicated that through LEP, and I think one of my colleagues will come in details, we are in the process of training and retraining our members. So that, for example, if a worker was working for one sector, the worker is retained to be employable in another sector, to be able, therefore, to be employed there and continue to contribute into the fund. It's dealing with two issues. contribution to the fund, its sustainability, but making sure that the worker continues to be employed. The public outreach is one of the challenges we have discovered, and I think we are great as a board that sometimes we have achievements and we're not explaining them to the public. Starting with contributors, because our core business is contributors, is workers. Because it's making sure that employers and workers understand at the workplace that there are these benefits, what's going to happen, and what is it that I need to do in the event that I'm unemployed. So that's the first thing. Or the death in the family, or whatever. That's the first thing. But second thing, direct to the question, what are we doing to make sure that there are workers in the deep rural areas who may benefit? Yes, there are outreach programs. We have agreed with the management that the communications department must utilize the board and use SABC radios, for example, because you know that you will actually reach about 30 million citizens of the Republic of South Africa in their own languages, explaining to them what are the issues. And as I said earlier on, that there's been challenges. We are working to establish a program where we'll do this work. We realize that from time to time we'll see the newspaper that there's an advert. We realize that not all workers will buy a Sunday newspaper, one. And two, it might be expensive for them, but people are listening to radio, and that's why we said let's go back to basics and use those kind of platforms, in particular where former members of UI might be unemployed, as a way of outreach. And we've taken the scene, for example, that we cannot go to, and one board member used to make this example, that we go to Mall of Africa, put a table there and hope that you're communicating with our members. One day they don't have money to go into that mall in the first place, but two, we're not reaching them. That's why we said, let's communicate with our people in a language, one, that they will understand, but go where they are, so that we don't think that we're areas where we are reaching, and we assume that we are reaching our own members. That's one of the areas, and Chair, we are working on that. Going back to board resolutions, I'm just going to mention a few, Chairperson. One of the decisions was that PIC put stability in your institution, i.e. employ the chief executive officer. And we're told that the resolution was that they are working on that. And remember, their mandate, they are an interim board up to June, July next year. They want to make sure that one, the CEO is employed, once that is done, then this other executive would follow, so that the chief executive officer forms part of the interviews for other decisions. That was one area. The second resolution was finding each other on Section 5D of the UI Act, so to make sure that we have a mandate to retain and to create jobs, so that they don't think that, for example, on EDCON issue, we are getting into a space where there's no mandate in the first. That's the past. That's the second resolution. And there was an issue of consequence management, Chairperson and honorable members. I have made an example about IO that we want to see action taken where there were serious breaches, and we want to make sure that there's follow-up and monies are brought back. The issue of old mutual, and I think I can go on and on, but those were the resolutions reached between ourselves and the PIC board. And lastly, that we must have committee-to-committee meetings to make sure that there are no recurrence of some of these things. Because our audit findings, not all of them, some of them were as a result of a PIC and what we term an elephant in the room. Moving forward, Chair, with your permission, we have a question around whether or not the intents are going to be absorbed. And I think that was answered by one honorable member later. Yes, we are saying, one, let's have a skill audit internally to know exactly where are the gaps internally, but two, make sure therefore that people we have what we call fit for purpose. And those intents, yes, honorable member, are going to be absorbed. I want to stop here and allow other board members to respond to the other questions. And the operational questions, I think the commissioner will deal with those. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Chair, through you. I think just on the issue of communication, it's something that the board has actually, you know, pronounced itself quite fairly on it. I mean, to say that we've got problems that are to be there and are to be known in the public by the people. And we've said that we require more from the executive team in terms of deliberating and coming back and giving us a strategy that is tangible. We think it's because it might be seen if we're not acting according to this, there might be benefit that might be lost and people are not accessing these things, and we think that that would affect our performance as a board. We're also saying when we get together and we go and visit programs that we have for people and we do inspections on what has been done, the work, that also must be communicated, because it's an opportunity for us as a board to engage with the community at large and take forward issues that they have. As part of a communication strategy, I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks back, we met with the CEOs of CETA and the chairperson to gear out bottlenecks and find out what issues they are experiencing and how can we intervene as a board to ensure that we deliver on both sides. Some of the issues that came out from there were issues that they're experiencing in terms of delivery timeously from our side financially, and also issues they're experiencing with the AG. And we have specific outcomes that are from there, which is to say that we'll sit down, convene another meeting, but out of that meeting, we must have actioned some of the issues that have been raised from both sides. It's an honest conversation that we're saying we're taking ourselves, and we're saying we're vulnerable to you, come let's deal with issues at an equal and partnership level so that we're able to deliver. And I think that's part of the communication strategy that we're working on. I also think, Commissioner will correct me if I'm wrong here, but then we've also looked at the issue of rural areas. And we've said that there should be issues, we should be dealing with that via buses, mobile buses, that will bring services closer to the people. And I think if I'm correct, that's already in play. I think 7 buses. That we believe will bring services closer to the people. So it's a multi approach, because by radio you can reach some people, by actually being present and announcing your site, you reach more people as well. Now, one of the honorable members raised an issue of whether what happens to the people once they've reached the benefit after the 12-month period. And it's an important question. Through our engagement with the CETAs, we've also said, is what you are training our people relevant to bring them up to speed in terms of what is required in the job market? And we said to them, we rely on you to ensure that what you are training or you're coming forward with is relevant in taking our people forward. And again, members will correct me if I'm wrong here, but when our people go to service centers, and they are out of employment to claim benefit, the idea is that they are also redirected for training so that they can be brought back into the job market. That's part of the things that we've said, that we really want to see the results out of that. We want to see how many. And some of the issues that we untapped with the CETA was that there is a disconnection when the people come in terms of accessing the data. So those are the things that we need to go back as a UI and unpack. So that's where we are, and I thought that it needed just to be clear. Thank you, Chair.
This one on. One, two, yes. Thank you very much, Chair, and to the members of the committee. My name is Honor. I'm sorry. My name is Thulani. <laughs> I'm very sorry, Chair. The starting point, Chair, for me is on the question of what happens after people shall have drawn benefits. They will be out there. I think the question must not be considered as the very same people being a burden on UIF. What it means is that the more they are outside, is that the value of UIF reduces. So it is in the interest of UIF strategically that you facilitate sustained stay in the labor market so that you have those people continuing to make their contributions. And so Matungwan is correct in suggesting that when people go to make their claims, the conversation over the desk is not only about the claim, but it is also about circumstances of living, it is about the type of work the person was doing, it should be about the skill set that the person has, and what could be the other areas of interest that the person thinks with a minimal skills investment, the person can be able to operate with portability of skills in different other areas. And so that is the type of conversation that takes place at the point of accessing the benefits or making the claim, which will definitely have an impact, not only after the end of the period of benefit, but when it is still unfolding. The second point, Chair, on the complex of questions that was raised by Honorable Hermans about the mandate of UIF, the vacancy rate, the intention and the absorption, is that it is a strategic issue of interest to the board that we have raised to the executive management, not only in as far as the interns are concerned. It starts right from the most senior levels of management to the least in the institution. We have to be seized with the function of making sure that we retain as much as possible. So it's something that the board has raised, which is beginning to institutionalize, including instances of where the commissioner is involved, rotation or delegation of certain functions to make sure that if anything were to happen that the commissioner leaves us, any of the top senior management is able to, can say with confidence, we will rise to the occasion and act. So it is something that as the board we have definitely taken interest in and raised with executive management. Maybe we could share as well with the committee that there were some operational constraints that were binding the same UIF from taking people who are into learnerships and internships, which out of interest we said we cannot be supporting internships and learnerships in all other institutions and not provide space to take those within UIF. And out of board engagements with the Ministry of Employment and Labour, we have been able to unblock those. Hence now we talk of even direct placement of some of these learners within UIF itself. We definitely, Chair, agree with Honorable Ngabane on the question of outputs and impact. We must just take it to its logical conclusion that our horizon should not only be limited to the outputs, because what an output is that if you say I'm going to use 100 rands to place two people in a learnership program and those people are there, you have achieved the output. It does not look into what is it that they are doing? To what extent are you using the productive capacities of those people that you have placed there? The type of work they do. And so once you start asking those questions, you are rising above the output level into the outcomes and then the impact, which in our horizon, in the planning paradigm of the board, it is right up to the impact. Hence then the questions that were, the issues that were raised by the chairperson in page 3 of the summary of his input.
the impact and the outcome consideration is such that you ask a question as to, out of the people that we graduate in the training programs that we do in the labor activation program, where do the majority of them end up? I think the question that was raised about communication is a genuine question, which only does not relate to access to information about getting benefits. It also should relate to the opportunities and the gains that the UIF has made. For an example, Chair and the committee, we had a program where we funded the training of young people as pilots. One of those is like gainfully employed now in a commercial airline, and we have not said anything about that. Some of the people that we train in agriculture are actively as being students now, not when they graduate, supplying some of the retail shops that we have had strategic partnerships with. And so that level of communication, I think, is something that we must take serious, even ourselves, as the institution as a whole. There was a question about the concession we make on the lack of capacity for the labor activation program, linking that to the fact that there were no special meetings. No. The chair challenged us to take the engagement serious enough such that where there are lessons, we're able to draw those lessons and improve. So that is the attitude, Chair. Firstly, we can confirm, Chair, that the meetings of the Labor Activation Committee have been very productive and overloaded in terms of the issues that it deals with. Two, we have tried to minimize on incurring additional costs, even where we could package to deal with the issues differently. And thirdly, we are making the concession that there is a lack of capacity on the internal operations of the labor activation program as an internal unit within UIF. And we have proactively as a board at the governance level made specific proposals of what could be done to make up for those capacity gaps. Let me make an example of some of these capacity gaps. If you implement a program with which you are partnering, let's say with a CETA, and contractually it is required that before you make any payment, there must be monitoring visits into the sites where those learners are. Because you have too few people in the labor activation unit internally, they may not visit all those sites. So what it means is that we are the ones who are holding the hands of the implementing partners from getting payments if the visit to the site is a trigger of the payment. And so in that case, strategically we have made proposals to the effect that, one, UIF must increase the internal capacity of the labor activation unit. We have already received positive feedback to the appointment of about 9 deputy directors who will be placed in the different provinces. We have made a proposal that, as the board now, we have made a proposal that UIF must also build additional project management capacity, which capacity can even be outsourced or shared with some of the implementing partners that we work with. And so that is the match in terms of closing that gap. And by the way, in addition to the 9 deputy directors, we also have 18, which will mean 18 assistant directors, which will mean 2 assistant directors per province. Already, that will boost our operational capacity significantly. And the last point, Chair, from my side, is on the question of monitoring of the activities. We take keen interest in all the activities that are in the plans and the budgets of UIF. We make sure that they get reported to the board committees. So if it relates to the issues that are on page 3 of the summary of the Chair, those will be presented to both the Labor Activation Program and the Investment Committee. So these are programs and projects
that are in the plans that are budgeted for, the majority of which are also on implementation. Of the new generation of projects, where we have made calls for proposals, received those, processed them, we're at the stage where we are rolling out the contracting phase with many of them. What we do, Chair, is that we never satisfy ourselves by receiving reports. Both at the level of the community and the board as a whole, we go and do physical visits to those sites. We have made a proposal that in the launches and the project visits that we do, the community must be invited so that we can witness those in real life unfolding. Thank you very much, Chair.
Can I check if to some okay?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm going to respond to the question on supply chain. AG was not happy with the deviations and how we extended contracts beyond the 15% that's allowable in terms of the Treasury regulations, because it tempers with the fairness and transparent and competitive process of supply chain. What we have done, Chair and Honourable Members, is that we are now holding managers accountable. No deviations are allowed unless it is a sole service provider case. If it's in the event of poor management and you were not able to start with the procurement process in time, we don't extend that contract. We have a system, an early warning system now, where we send all the contract managers the early warning 6 months prior to the expiry of the contract to ensure that they start with the procurement process. And that process is monitored on a monthly basis. We've also appointed, we call them supply chain champions. They are responsible for the procurement in their units and contract management. So we have trained them and we hold quarterly meetings with them where they also have to come and report about the vendor performance. Yes, Chair, that's about it, because if you also look at our irregular expenditure, it is as a result of poor contract management. So by putting this intervention in place, we are also curbing on the irregular expenditure. Thank you very much, Chair.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to respond to three questions that are left now. The first one was, do we conduct customer satisfaction survey and how do you do it? Chair, I can confirm that we do conduct customer experience. We conduct it at the call center at URF. It happens daily. There's an automatic technology that triggers the customer to rate the service that they're receiving at URF. We also conduct customer experience at the liver centers where the actual service is received. LPNIR, as part of their annual customer satisfaction and also part of research, they also do annual customer satisfaction survey across all Dell service, Department of Employment and Labor Services across, just to see to what extent are our customers happy. But they take it further though, because they also do staff satisfaction, because it's a balancing act. Are our customers happy, but to what extent are our staff happy to provide the services? So they also do that part. And right now, the CFO, the COO possibly might add, we are busy now with an action plan to put in place actions where our staff are saying they're not happy, because part of their happiness reflects in how best they provide services to our staff. So we are busy with an action plan to close those gaps. There was a question around slide 25 with respect to whether the aid that I reflected there is aid recurring audits and what about the rest of them. What we did on this slide was to lift up the recurring audit findings, and then the 49 ones that are new, we didn't build them in, but they're part of our action plan where they are detailed. We're just worried that the report might be too long, but we do have the report in detail of all the remaining 49 audit findings. The Clean Audit Committee, is it internal or external, Chair? It's an internal committee. It is chaired by the Chief Operations Officer, Judith Kumbi, with representatives from different units that are affected. The intention is for us to hold each other accountable and report to the Director General, EXCO, Risk Committee, Audit Committee, and ultimately to the board. But the board, they need to see that we are holding each other accountable, and there's a string of meetings where we are reporting on progress we're making with each finding. Thank you, Chair.
I just want to check if there is, so that I allow the chair, and then after the chair, it will then get the deputy minister.
Chair, thanks. I think there's one question that was left. It was the last question. The poverty alleviation, where it's happening, and so forth. I'm sure the UIF will be able to make that information available. And we'll make it available to the committee secretary for you so that you can know exactly what is happening, where, to what extent. Thanks.
Chair?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much to the chairperson and the committee members present. What has happened is the board at play, and we are all the time, at some stages, we plan that we are going to be leaving starting at 9, and we find that there are problems, and sometimes we have to knock off at around about 9 o'clock at night, because we would not like to leave the work when there are problems that are still on. I remember at some stage we have to sleep again because we stay in Durban and we have some meetings in Pretoria. So I like the dedication of my board members in everything that we do. We work as a team. So when I said that one of the team members must present, I knew that they will be presenting and they will be answering some questions because everybody is working very hard. Thank you very much.
Is your hand up? Sorry, Tim.
Yeah, I don't have a mic, but I'll ask you to present for the
chair. Come again?
I think sufficiently the labor activation program with its different streams has covered that. I mean, there's a lot of detail that is in the presentation, in the fine print, which we may not have verbally spoken to, but satisfactorily, I think the team has done well.
GM?
No, thank you, Honourable Chair, and the members, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. I want to thank you, Chair, for always calling us to come in account. It's not a nice thing, you know, to come in account, but we do appreciate the gesture because without this portfolio committee, we will be doing as we wish. And I think when we heard that we are supposed to come to the portfolio committee, the minister called the two boards. We had a meeting with each board yesterday. And I must also indicate upfront, Honourable Chairperson, that it was our first engagement with the board since we came into the ministry. And I think that is also a shortcoming because I'm sure you will have heard that the AG's report, one of the entities had come and they had not dealt with it at the board. So the issue also of the advisory, Now, I'll just pick up here and there on some issues that are like an impediment to the progress or that impedes on the performance of the boards. And both boards, if you might have heard, they are not happy that they are an advisory board. They want to be an executive type of a board that takes decisions and stuff like that. Let me put it aside, that one. I'll come back to it. But to start from the beginning, Honorable Chair, that we need to deal with the issue, and we have acknowledged it, and the Minister has raised it. Remember the last week when we were here, the Minister indicated that matter of 15 Madoda in a board where there are no females. I think we need to deal with how these boards are formed, or how the members are appointed, because that is where the problem lies. Because these boards are set up through this organized structure called NEDLAC. Now, in NEDLAC, you have different stakeholders. You've got business, those who represent business through BUSA. You've got those who come from labor, through organized labor, different organizations from associations like from a trade union, COSA to FEDUSA, NAC to and the others, and you've got the community who represent your general community, your NGOs and stuff like that. So I think we need to take responsibility ourselves as executive authority to put an item in our NEDLAC sessions where we go directly to say to NEDLAC, you have appointed, you have given, because they recommend to the minister for appointment. You have recommended to the minister, because we cannot say we were not there, because we are successor in law, and therefore whatever has happened, we will have to take responsibility. So we need to go back to NEDLAC and say to NEDLAC, if we can't, here is the issue. We want you to really look into the people you have recommended for the minister's appointment into the board. And among others, say for instance, there are four people from organized labor. We must actually put systems in place and say, or regulations to say, if there are four people coming from one from labor, two must be females. We need to put that in place. So we must put it, we must recommend, because the ministry appoint the board based on the recommendations that we say. So I think this can be changed. We don't have to be drastic. We can be drastic to say let's dissolve, but it will be too extreme. But we can then go the route of going back to NEDLAC and raising this anomaly, because it is an anomaly. And to say this is how, not necessarily only you as the portfolio committee, but even ourselves, we feel that this is not right. I mean, we are trying, the government, we are trying to pursue the fact that there must be parity in everything that we do in terms of gender balance and gender parity. And this is like a drawback, actually. It's a setback that we have in committees up to this 2019, where you find only males. If I could go back to the issue of the executive authority vis-a-vis the advisory role. In our engagement, we dealt with this matter because I think the law was very clear when they set up these boards as advisory roles. Because when we also, but we also agreed, as I will talk to the way forward in terms of what is it that we have agreed on. Because once you also give, maybe we will mitigate later, but if you give them executive authority, it will mean something else. Then there will be independent boards. Then, because I think that within the law, within the advisory role that our boards are playing, they still have a clear mandate to actually make sure that they are able to execute their mandate. And it cannot be right also to say that the board is not capacitated enough as an advisory board to take certain decisions. Because the board takes its decisions in consultation with the minister. because they are set up by the minister. So we found that there has been a gap where, since we came, we have never met with the boards. That might be a problem or a challenge that we have agreed then in principle that at a point of departure, Honorable Chairperson, that we need a session, like a one-day session with each board as a minister, where in the form of a workshop, where we discuss the roles and responsibilities of the board as to what is it that is expected of the board themselves. And over and above that, in terms of line functions, in terms of who is supposed to do what and which mandate is required, whether concurrence from the minister to do certain things. Surely the board, as they were able to come up with a plan to do certain things, surely the board is empowered to set up certain systems in place for them to be able to either follow through issues of discipline or in terms of what the AG's recommendations are in terms of the action plans. I'm sure they are empowered, and they can further be empowered through the mandate and extension of the mandate by the minister. I'm sure when we talk about these things, we will unpack those things. We will sit down with them, and we want to go through and understand what are our limitations, what is it that we can go through. But we have agreed that, among others, because they've accepted also where there are shortcomings in terms of the reports of the AG, they have accepted that there had been challenges, and as you could also see in terms of where they have talked about the issues of skills gap, which they also dealt with, they were able to do the skills audit and stuff like that. But over and above that, Honorable Chairperson, we have agreed that the workshop must, among others, deal with issues of corporate governance and the limitations of their advisory status. We'll need to unpack it further. Issues relating to performance and consequence management, how to go about such, to better define the relationships with the executive authority in between the board and the management. So where necessary, we would have to call in even expert advice where possible to come and unpack some of these issues, because some might be legal and they might need legal people to come and advise further. But we will have to begin to unpack the legal interpretation of an advisory board vis-a-vis that of the executive. So we want to further go and interrogate these structures, their legislative frameworks and processes of both funds. We have said it, and the minister has reiterated the fact that as much as you have a feeling, you hear what members of the board are saying, especially when you heard UIF one member mention the fact that these are monies of the employees. And one question was asked, at what point does the member exit? Then they say it's after 12 months. So after 12 months, the member is exiting, and there's no more. You are no more a member. You don't get any more benefits. But there are programs that continue because of the money of the members that have been paid, and the interest that is generated, and the investments that are generated by the board through various schemes. So which means actually, in essence, this money of the workers is continuous. It's there. It's staying there. But the member will benefit only for 12 months. The issue that we want to interrogate further in the future is to as to whether these training programs, are they beneficial to our people? And I had also one response to that effect, but if we have to think outside the box, because we know for a fact, Honorable Chairperson, that not everybody who goes through or is taken through such a training program gets to be reabsorbed anywhere in any employment. And some people, we must also acknowledge the fact that are untrainable. You will take a miner, a person who's been working in the mines or somewhere else, and want to retrain them on what? We will have to look into the future as to, now that we've got this new mandate of employment, are we not doing something wrong? Can we not explore other possibilities of making sure that the very same money that our people have been contributing over the years will work better for our people? come up with schemes, not necessarily, and we need to also interrogate who are the beneficiaries of this training program, not necessarily, even including the service providers. I can tell you that, and the amount of money, I mean, if you look into, I saw one of the slides that we were presenting yesterday from the UIF that says that, say 16 or 6 companies were rescued. I will use the word that word for a lack of a better word. And they were rescued for something like 92 million or 82 million and to save the jobs of 2,000 people. Now, sometimes we spend so much money to save so much, so few, little, so, such a little number of jobs. We know that in the long term it works. But with 96 million or 7 billion or 10 billion, 10% of that, wouldn't it be able to generate new jobs? We know that ours is to preserve old jobs that are there. What is it that we need to really look into the mandate based on the fact that we've got now a new mandate of employment creation? So I think that I'm raising this knowing that fully that we have committed ourselves as with the minister that we are going to have sessions with both boards to really look into some of these things. While we are dealing also with whether to transform the advisory role to executive authority or not, and what benefit will that come with if we do such. So we will need to look whether it is possible or it is not possible. But we cannot promise that it will happen. But we want our boards to also understand the fact that as the executive authority, we've got a mandate now, a new mandate, over and above the preservation of jobs that are there currently. We need to create more jobs. We need to change the landscape in terms of the economic activities. We need to change the status quo. It cannot be business as usual, where we do things like we used to do them 25 years back. It can't be right. We need to change how we've been doing. Our modus operandi must change. So I say, Honorable Chairperson, without a lot of issues, we have promised that we will be meeting soon, and we will continue to keep abreast the Portfolio Committee on development of ourselves and our engagements with the board. And we remain committed. As we said previously, that we are at your service. We acknowledge the oversight role that you are playing over us, and we in turn must play the same oversight role on our board. So we are fully committing ourselves again that we are at your service, and we'll make sure that. I hope that our boards will not take it personal, but we are going to make sure that we engage each other and we are open. We will come up with possible solutions to the problems that are there, and we'll report back to the Portfolio Committee. Thank you so much.
No, thank you very much, GM, and to members, and to our guests for and the department for honoring the invitation. And in honoring the invitation, you came with your presentation. You may have, I didn't want to be, cynical, I'm lacking the correct word of asking, when last were you called to a portfolio committee? Which year, when last were you called? Mr. Mahlangu, when last were you called?
Well, I'm a on record. I've been on this board for some time. Let's just say for some time. We're never, whether summoned or called or honorable members. Yeah, we really appreciate the fact that finally we are actually here.
Good. Chairperson. Thank you for being honest. Compensation fund?
I think, Chair, the last time we were here, it was just as part of management, and management was being asked. But specifically as the board, I think this is the first time, and I think we appreciate it, and we know that we do exist now.
Woo, what a laugh. No, I'm asking this because you could pick up, as the chair, a level of panic. You could pick up a level of bordering into arrogance in responding to some of, and then, so, it's only that we told ourselves that we are going to be patient, because as the chair, I was happy when a motion was moved in the committee last time that let's call the board. It was in the 10 years that I was here. Never, when boards are being called. Remember that when you're a member of a particular committee, you're not confined. Your interests are not only confined. You try, you've got friends here, you are invited in one of the meetings. And we then said it can't be, and I took that advantage that it can't be. It can't be precisely because our country is going through a very rough, difficult times. And institutions of this nature, whose boards are to ensure that those institution functions, no matter what is the legislation saying, because it's not about you going for a sitting of a board, but it's about ensuring that when that person goes to an office in government, UIF or Labour Centre or whatever, that person leaves there saying, hey, things have changed. I'm saying things have changed because majority of us here are coming from an era where some of these things were in a state that we are not. And I'm raising this in particular because majority of members of these boards are trade unionists. You are appointed or seconded or whatever by your union, by your federation. I'm making an example. And take this as part of a service, your members. But not only to your members, because that member has got 10 members of the family. So I think you must take that very seriously. I was deliberate when I said you are not going to leave until I make the DM speak and I speak. Because if we would have allowed you to leave, I would be speaking to ordinary members and one a chair or and a commissioner. No, I want you to take this first encounter as a serious encounter, because it is the beginning of a road that we are to travel together. It is not going to be easy. As I've said, we have tolerated, we are pardoning you, it's fine. The things that we have learned, okay, the body language, the response, what is it saying? Muslim Nam sit at this side. I'm a chair. Mr. Mashango, they know where we're coming from. And so please take this serious. Don't take this committee for granted. The minister is a former trade unionist. That is to make you to panic, because you will know all the corners. But in all the issues that you have raised as board members, chair and is that we will then make a follow-up. Was on the issues of learnership, please submit those learnerships in which sector, gender, race and age. But we don't want a general, we don't want, I didn't want to ask that question because I felt it would be unfair. But now it's a directive from the committee. You don't be general when you come to us anymore. We want specifics. And you know why? It's us as politicians, when we go to our constituencies, that are answering difficult questions. And as officials, Nihlalipi, as officers, all of us here, irrespective of political affiliation, we are answerable to our constituents, which it is the constituents that we are both servicing. When the entities were presenting, I asked them, all of us here, we don't contribute to UIF. Tinamo's, we don't contribute to UIF. So we are to be very sensitive. So we want that. Two, if you say you are rescuing distress companies, tell us which sector, which province, because when they meet a person in KZN or in the Western Cape or in Northern Cape or in PE, I can say, hey, I bet my hands are way too. No. So that we are then able to then begin to say, slowly, painfully as it's going to be, we have got this added responsibility of ensuring that at least we are still grappling with the employment part of the portfolio, but we know for the fact that in your mandate you do assist. So please, obviously you're not going to be able to give us now. We, through the secretary of the committee, We will request that. Well, because there's one thing that we wanted you to tell us, but now that the DM said you only met yesterday, I will reserve that question until such time because it will be unfair of us, I think, to want you to reflect on issues. You'll find the way of the last administration. But we don't want to do things as if there was nothing that has been done by the administration. So for us to do the work, we want to do the work within the context of what then was taking place in the last administration. We, as we'll be conducting our oversight, we will also look into the boards. We're told that there's one board that has got skills. They decided in the compensation that they must have, because they're dealing with medical things, they must have somebody that has got a medical background. We will, DM, we'll want to check. And we'll have to check onto that. But which skill? Which skills are you, the board members? Because we don't want a situation where we find an experience that we have been having in what is unfolding in the country. We don't want that at a particular time when things have fallen apart. We are told that the board members. The teacher was told to be an accountant. Like it happened in one time in the health sector that a postman became a CEO of a hospital. Please take it serious what the DM have said. It's not a threat. Please, trade unions, chair, speaking with trade unions directly here, COSATU, NACTU, and FEDUSA. Can be. It can be. If you are resisting, we'll do what the DM said, it can be done. You'll be the first one because of being insensitive. So I know the challenge is there. Tell me, I know the challenge is how difficult, but it can't be now. So we will try as the committee, we'll try and speak through the chair, speak with your principals. The executive is doing its part. We will do our part because of what we have observed. It's something that is totally, totally unacceptable. When the entities were here, board members of both entities, we then requested that if we are going to have an outreach, we're going to conduct an outreach at a particular in a particular province, in a particular region, inform us in time. You know that by the 31st. They're going to be at Mkanduli. Immediately you take that decision that on the 31st they're going to be at Mkanduli. I'm making an example. We must know exactly so that we are able, because not the entire committee, but a person whose constituency office is there. I'm also able to speak with the member of part of the legislature whose constituency is there. I'm able to speak, sensitize the district mayor or the local mayor or the councillor, because we are all in a space where people are expecting public representatives to change their social condition. So we will monitor through the executive. It's not going to be the last time. We have noted the issues that we have raised. We have got the responsibility as the legislative arm of the state of ensuring that things are happening in a manner that they are supposed to be happening. I'm happy when you said when people go and collect, the conversation is not about only money, it's about where were you working, where. We would like to have that data so that we're able to follow up and see exactly if then that is happening. Last time there was a joke in the last meeting that now we're not going to say, I see Africa, not. We've landed as the committee. If heads are to roll, they are going to roll, but members. Commissioners, if heads are to roll, they are going to roll. But we'll never do that arrogantly. We will never create a hostile environment. We will take you with us, but one thing that we will never tolerate is board members who think that when we ask questions, we are asking trivial questions. What's another? That question that I was asking. Only that DM, if I can't do that, the chair on behalf of the committee, write a letter and say, tell us as this portfolio committee, why can't we make a motion that you are to be dissolved? Yes, we're going to. If the legislation is allowing us to do that, we will. But obviously we're human. But what is important is that all of us, my grandmother once said to us, and we're very young that time, no matter how educated you are, no matter how much money you have, never look down upon somebody because you don't know what tomorrow holds. I said that in Xhosa, but in English it said, let we are all to humble ourselves for the benefit. So the last is that this was an empowering process, both sides, but next time it won't be as easy as it is now. There are things that will follow up, as I've said. And thank you very much. I hope you won't miss your flights. You are not going to miss them, miss your flights. I'm asking this question, I was deliberate in asking this question, that if you are coming for the first time, very first time, how can you be worried about your flight when you don't know how long that meeting was going to take? How can you be worried about the flight? So, travel safe home. If you were to sleep over or you miss your flight, don't come back and say it's an irregular expenditure because we were in a portfolio committee. No. Thank you very much. Our meeting stands adjourned. Can members of the portfolio committee, just for a second, as they're leaving, stay behind. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, DM.
Yeah.